Good morning. We are at a crucial key time in the life of our church because we are seeking to expand our pastoral leadership, our leadership through a group of guys we're going to call elders, guys who fit the qualifications we're going to talk about this morning as we look in the book of Titus. And so the guys and their wives are coming up standing before you who God's kind of dealt with them. I've spent some time with them. I've been checking out their lives, some of them for years, some of them for the past year or so, just kind of seeing if they're the type of men that I believe should be leading God's church, and I believe these guys are. And they've prayed about it. Their wives have prayed about it. We spent some time yesterday really talking through a lot of issues. And I just want to introduce these guys, John and Donna Park on the far right here, Bob and Terry Lancaster right here, and Leon and his wife Sherry isn't here this morning. Will you pray for Sherry this week? Her dad had a stroke, a pretty bad one, a couple days ago, and she's actually with him. And so she couldn't be here, and it's a hard day for Leon. And if you don't know it, Leon and Sherry are Nick's parents, and so pray for them with that. But I wanted to bring them up here and just introduce them. They're going to start going through a process. It's going to take us about 6 months. What we're going to do is we're going to really test their character. We're really going to test their theology. We're going to help have them work through some theological issues. We're going to give them a chance to kind of see what it looks like as we lead God's church, seeking Him, trying to follow Jesus. The goal is for these leaders and any leader in our church, even if you're leading children's ministry, the goal is for us to follow Jesus and then to lead others to do the same. And so they've kind of taken that mantle, and they're going to walk through this process. Hopefully in 6 months, we'll be bringing these people back in front of you at a time where we actually appoint them, install them as the elders, the pastoral leaders of this church. At that point in time, we will be equals, and we will be a team that works together as a team of equals. And so that's kind of happening. We decided to do the book of Titus because this is where we were heading. It's so important. One guy can only do too much. I told them yesterday, sometimes I feel like the guy that's, you know, a street corner, magician, or, you know, and he's spinning about 8 plates on poles just trying to keep them going. And as a church, it is important that we multiply leadership at every level, and it starts at the top. These guys are going through a process to join me in leading God's vision for Genesis. And so I'm going to pray here. After I pray, we're going to show you a video, but I want you to pray for these guys, pray for their wives, pray for their families, pray that God would use them, and just that this process would be really cool for them, and that ultimately we would raise up godly leaders at all levels. All right? Pray with me, and then I'll talk about the video. Jesus, we love you. Praise you. Thank you for these men who feel called by you to serve and lead as pastoral leaders here. I pray that, Lord, you would protect them and help them be strong in their character and in their doctrine. I pray for their wives as they kind of walk through this with them, Lord, that you would help them to be supportive of the vision that they have for their family and for our church. And Lord, I just ask that you will do a great work in them. And Lord, that as you raise them up, Lord, underneath them, that you will raise other people to lead in other places, and that you will help us to serve you, live our mission, to reach people and love this culture. I just thank you for the goodness that you show to us and your grace in our lives. In your name I pray. Amen. So they kind of head back to their seats. Up till now, we have had a group of guys that are not here that you don't know that have been helping me lead Genesis. We started with an elder advisory team of 3 guys who were not part of our church, but who've been through the same journey. They were all church planters who've had a lot of experience in leading a new church, getting things started. They kind of knew the dangers that we would face and some of the pitfalls that we had to be aware of. And they worked with me, and I spent a lot of time with these guys praying and thinking about Genesis, and they've helped me kind of think of some of the issues that we need to consider. And so what we're going to do during the series on Titus is a few times during the series, we're actually going to show you a video of these different men and just let them kind of speak into the life of church. You can kind of put a face there and see who it is. The one we have this morning is a guy named Darren Patrick. He's the pastor of the Journey Church. They now have 3 campuses. Their church that started about about 6 or 7 years ago. Now they run well into the over 1,000 people each week. And God has, he's been somebody who's really spoken in my life a lot of ways. He's just going to talk about to us as a church for a few minutes about the importance of this step of raising up godly men to serve as elders. So check out the screen.
Hey guys, I'm Darren Patrick, lead pastor of The Journey in St. Louis, Missouri, also vice president of Acts 29, and I've actually been serving Genesis Church as a member of the advisory team, helping Mike sort out decisions and helping him lead your great church for a couple years now. It's important to find the right men to serve in the role of elder in the local church because those men, basically in their marriages and how they father their kids and how they lead their lives are basically an example for everybody else in the church. And everybody else in the church will look at the elders and their families and say, basically, I'm going to live my life like those guys because that's our example. Those are our leaders. And so you want those men from the beginning to be men of character, and you want those men to be men of integrity, and you want those men to realize that everyone is going to imitate their life, and so their life should be imitatable. Some of the things to consider for those of you men and your wives that are considering maybe entering the elder process, you need to really check your motives. Why would you want to do this? 1 Timothy 3 says that those who aspire to this office aspire to a noble thing. It's a good thing for you to desire the office. It can be a good thing, but it can be a bad thing. There could be improper motives there. So really test your motives. What's it all about? Why would you want to be an elder? Is it about power? Is it about control? Is it about, you know, making a name for yourself? Or are you called to do it? And you usually know that you're called to do it because, you know, you just can't really see yourself doing anything but that. And maybe you don't even necessarily desire to do that with all of your heart because you know it's going to be hard. And so I would just really test your motives and think about, okay, is this really what God's calling me to do? And the other thing to think about is just the cost of it in the sense that, you know, this is going to ruin your life as you know it. And I don't mean that just necessarily in a negative way, but your plans, the way you do your free time, the way you think about, you know, vacations and time off, all of those kind of things need to be adjusted. Doesn't mean you don't have vacations, and it doesn't mean that you, you know, don't have time off, but it just means that you have to consider all things kind of in a new light if you become an elder. And the pressure that it puts on your marriage and on your family is something to wrestle with as well, because you're not just bearing your own load, the load of your family. Now you're bearing the burden and the load of the church. And that can be very demanding and very hard. And so I would just suggest, if you're considering being an elder, to really pray it through, talk to other men who are elders, have your dear wife talk to other ladies who are elders, and just really count the cost and figure out, okay, is this what God is calling me to do? It's a wonderful thing to be an elder in God's church, but it's very costly, and it's something to really consider. Yeah, the characteristics and qualities and qualifications, I think, are best found in 1 Timothy 3 and Titus chapter 1. And those are basic character issues that Paul talks about there in those books. Issues of being above reproach, which means there's nothing in the life of that man that someone on the outside could look at and say, well, that guy's got bad character in that area. Doesn't mean the man is perfect. What it means is, though, there's a maturity about him. There's a quality of life about him. There's a integrity about him that makes other people look at him and say, wow, I want to follow that man. I want to imitate his life and his character. And so, you know, there's tons of stuff there in 1 Timothy 3 and Titus that we see. One of the things that I think about is that he is hospitable, which means that not just that he has people hanging out at his house all the time, but that he literally befriends strangers, which means he's in relationship with non-Christians, which I think is very important in a church context, that you want your pastors to not just be guys who hang out at the office all day, eat a lot of meals, you know, just do a lot of pastor stuff. You literally want your pastors out with people who need to know about Christ, befriending those folks, having them over for dinner, going out to dinner with those people. And so that one characteristic sometimes slides underneath the rug, and I think it's an important one. Another one of those characteristics is that he is a man who is temperate, which means that his emotions are under control. You don't want a pastor that is just led by his emotions, whether he's led by anger and he's angry most of the time, or he's just very hypersensitive and he cries a lot when things go bad. You want a guy who can, you know, take a punch, who can deal with people who are quarrelsome without getting angry and violent. You want a man who is not necessarily even keeled all the time, but a man who is able to exercise self-control over his emotions. And those are two important characteristics, I think, in an elder.
Your Bible, turn to Titus chapter 1. If you don't have a Bible at the end of our rows, we have them there for you. We'd love for you to take one of those. On that Bible, we'll be on page 857. If you don't have a Bible at home that's yours, or yours is kind of worn out, or it's kind of older one, or it's in a translation that's harder for you to understand, that's our gift to you. We'd love for you to take that Bible, keep it, read it, wear it out, and then come get a new one, give one to your friends, all that stuff, all right? We'll be on page 857 in that Bible, Titus chapter 1, just kind of background. We're preaching through this book, and the title of our series is Building a Healthy New Church. As a church is just under 2 years old, we're still kind of forging our way, figuring out what our mission and vision, how it really looks as we live it out. Part of that, like I said, is leadership. And so this book was written, it's a letter written from a guy named Paul, who is a guy who just lived his life, sold out to God, traveled all over the world planting churches. And he's writing to a young man named Timothy, who spent a lot of time with Paul. Timothy is now on this island, the island of Crete in the Mediterranean Sea. They were on a missionary journey there and planted several churches. Titus stayed in on Crete. And so Paul is writing instructions to Titus on how to lead these new churches. What are some of the things that need to happen in the new churches to help them be all that God wants them to be, to grow, to make a difference in the lives of people, to be gospel-centered churches? And so it's a good thing for us to study this book, because it helps us make sure that we put the right things into our church. That as we kind of build our church, as we put the structure of who we are and all that kind of stuff, that we are building in the right sort of things. And so this morning, we're going to start with verse 5 of chapter 1. Paul says this: "This is why I left you in Crete, so that you might put what remained in order and appoint elders in every town as I directed you." This is the second part of a two-part kind of series, or two-part little mini part of this, where we're talking about leadership in a new church, and specifically the highest level of leadership: elders, pastors, bishops. Those three words all through the Bible are used interchangeably, talking about the same men. If anyone is above reproach, the husband of one wife and his children are believers and not open to the charge of debauchery or insubordination. For an overseer, as God's steward, must be above reproach. He must not be arrogant, quick-tempered, or a drunkard, or violent, or greedy for gain, but hospitable, a lover of good, self-controlled, upright, holy, and disciplined. He must hold firm to the trustworthy word as taught, so that he might be able to give instruction in sound doctrine, and so also to rebuke those who contradict it. During our series, we've been using different images that kind of come from construction work sites, and this morning, our out front and center image is a ladder. This is one of those services we actually wish we could have been in the other theater, because they have this really cool catwalk, and I was thinking, man, we could like prop a ladder up, and I could come like sliding down the ladder and just pop out of nowhere, and you guys would be like, ooh, where'd he come from? Look at that. But it won't work in here because they don't have a catwalk, and that's probably a good thing, because I probably would have fell off the ladder and broke my leg or something like that, and then everybody would have laughed at me and I'd have felt bad about myself. But anyway, but we have a ladder up here, and I've spent a lot of time on ladders when I've done some of these construction projects, or just going up into my own house, you know, cleaning leaves out of the gutters and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, we had a hard time for a long time with a ladder. I bought one of these cool ladders. Have you seen, you know, they start off, they're about that big, but then they just like start unfolding and popping. You can make them into like a step ladder or this really long extension ladder. It is so cool. It's like one of the coolest things I ever, are you ready for this? Bought my wife. And that's true. I bought it for Valentine's Day one year. That was my gift to her for Valentine's Day. All you women are going, that is so wrong. You don't get it. This is the way Power tools are my wife's heart language. So I bought her this ladder, and man, we get a lot of use out of it. And a ladder is kind of the image that is used a lot in the world to talk about leadership, i.e. you're climbing the corporate ladder. You're kind of finding your way to the top. And even sometimes you see a ladder, you think, man, it doesn't matter who you step on to get above them. You just climb that ladder no matter what the cost. Well, that's not God's type of leadership in the church. In fact, that runs opposite of the way Jesus led and he called his followers to lead. But I'm going to pour a little bit of different meaning into the image of a ladder as we kind of talk about who these people are who are going to lead God's church. Because when I've been on some of these work projects, I've worked at places where the roof was not in good shape. There were some dangerous things about just kind of getting on the roof and doing some of the work that we were going to have to do. And here's the deal. The guy who led the crew chief, the one who was in charge, who was overseeing all the other people, it was very important for this guy to be the first one up the ladder and on the roof to make sure it was a safe place. I.e., if anybody's fallen through, it needed to be him. If anybody's going to go through the roof, and you know, when you're big and round and heavy like me, that's not a fun thing. You know, I'd much rather send a 115-pound little girl up the ladder and say, "You test the roof, and I'll follow you." But when I led, I realized at that site that I need to be the first one up the ladder on that roof. I need to walk around and see if there were soft places and places that could be dangerous, because it was my job as a leader to make sure that if anybody took the hit, I took it. But on top of that, once we kind of got going, it was also my job with the ladder to make sure it was safe for everybody else. I either would hold the ladder myself at the top of the roof to make sure that as kids came up on these mission projects, that they would have a safe climb up the ladder. I would make sure somebody was at the bottom holding it. I would make sure the ladder was in a safe place. It was part of my job was to make sure that the experience, the work experience for everybody else there was safe and comfortable and was done in a way that they could be themselves and deal with their fears and their struggles, but have a great experience on that work site. And as a pastoral leader, that's exactly what God has called myself. It's what God is calling these men to, that they're the first one up the ladder when it's dangerous, when there's a problem, when there's a struggle. And the rest of the time, they are literally making this church a safe place for people to explore faith, for people to wrestle with issues, for people to have failures, for people to live life, and then to figure out their calling, to figure out who they are, to figure out their gifts, and then to give them safe places to live those things out. That's what we're called here to do. And what Paul does is he explains to Titus, he says, listen, as you appoint these elders, it is so important that you find guys who have the right character. One of the darkest times in my life, and the life of my wife, we were young and we had just gotten married. I've been married about a year and a half when God moved us to a church that was in central Missouri. And I'm not going to give you a lot of details about this. I'm not doing this to whine and complain. I'm just telling you, this was part of my journey. As we went to a church, I was working with teenagers in churches, to a church where the pastor had some unbelievably deep character issues. We learned it like within days after we went, because we found out he actually had lied to us about our salary to get us to come. And then once we showed up at the church, we found out from the church that they were going to pay us a lot less than what he'd promised us, which the amount he promised us was squat anyway. But we came, and all of a sudden we were like, oh my gosh, what do we do with this? He promised us we would have health insurance, and there was none. We had no benefits, nothing. And he had told us all this stuff, I mean, to our face. And as I was there, we began to realize that something had happened, short-circuited in this man who was standing in front of the people every week, preaching and teaching and doing all the things. Something had happened in his life where he literally had gotten to the point where he believed that if it came out of his mouth, it was true, whether it was true or not. There was a couple times where he would get jealous, and he actually went to people who were very close, dear friends of ours, and told them that we had said things about them that we never said, and kind of set himself up as the middleman to solve all the problems, but there were problems he created. These people wouldn't talk to us. We had no clue why. And so we finally kind of sat down, what's going on? Well, pastor said you said this. And how do you say, oh my gosh, there's no truth in that. And for about 2.5 years, we lived in fear that at any time he could have us fired. That if he told us anything, we didn't know what to do with it. And trying to honor God, because the Bible actually says some pretty clear things about confronting people who are in authority over you. I was careful. I mean, I really found God in the midst of this. You need to hear this. It's probably one of the deepest times of my life with God for Heidi and I. But man, it was hard. It was dark. And the end result was this, that after about a year and a half, after about 2.5 years there, some things blew up when we were actually on a mission trip, kind of like the one I'm describing to you, where he actually lied to a teenager and then tried to cover his tracks. And it like blew up. And what ended up happening is the deacons actually had to get together and they started saying, all right, let's find out what's going on. And every single one of those guys had experiences like this. So they start putting together a list thinking, we just need to bring this guy in, sit him down and pray with him. But they began to put together a list of things that he'd done that were unethical and actually sometimes breaking the law. And the list was like 3 pages long. As people said, well, yeah, this happened to me, but I never wanted to tell anybody. And they actually had to deal with that pastor. He had to resign. There were all kinds of issues. And it left a trail of brokenness and hurt and pain in that church that probably for some people still lasts to this day. His kids lost their faith. And it all started because, man, there was something in this guy that just, wow. And he was leading, he was preaching, doing all this stuff, but there was something on the inside of him where it wasn't connecting in his life. It is important as we raise up leaders that we take a good look at the character of these men, starting with me. And when you see character defects in me, those need to be exposed. That's tough, I know. But this is what Paul's telling Titus, okay? And here's why. You're like sitting here going, all right, man, I'm off the hook. This doesn't have to do with me at all. It does. Here's the whole connection. And I'll make this all the way through. Because what happens, God's design, is that the life of the leader will be reproduced in the life of those who are in the church. That's just, it's going to happen. The character and the life of the leader is going to be reproduced. And Paul understands this, and he says, listen, when you raise up leaders, they need to be men who've been transformed by God in such a way that that's contagious. People see it, and they say, man, whatever that guy has, I want it. I want to be like that person. I see their marriage. I see their family. I see their life. I see the way they handle situations, and they're not perfect. They're not sinless, but they are people who something's happened where God's changed them. And so that's kind of what goes on. And in chapter 1, verse 6, he says, if anyone is above reproach, that phrase he actually uses again in verse 6, again, above reproach, and it's kind of an umbrella. There are two lists in the New Testament of the qualifications of people who serve. This one here, and also one in 1 Timothy. And I'm not going to go through all of them. Actually, if you want to pick up sermon notes, I've kind of highlighted the differences in the two lists and the similarities. But in both lists, this is the first word out of Paul's mouth. He says, listen, a guy who needs to be an elder, he needs to be above reproach. And the idea of above reproach is a word in the original language that means somebody who cannot have an accusation against him in a court. It's a guy who, if you were to bring him into a court of law, and you know, you hear the background, and you know, the law and order people walked in, they would have nothing to say in accusation against this person. There's no charge they could bring. There's nothing in their character, in their life, that they could bring and really do, an accusation, a charge against them. And what he's saying is listen, the people who are your leaders in your church and in your culture, their character needs to be such that when people look at them, the first thing that comes to mind isn't, yeah, I know that guy. He's a bum. He's a drunk. He's a no good son of a, his family's all messed up. When we look at people, we need to say, man, these are people who there's something about the quality of their life. But here's the deal. The deal about this is that the word that is here that is above reproach is an image that is tied to another word in the Bible, the word justification. It is a legal word that is used throughout the New Testament that describes what happens when a person meets Christ. And this is what happened. Here's the gospel. Here's the good news for you and for me and for everybody else. that I am not above reproach, that I am a person who is in desperate need of grace. I will not choose, as we sang the song, God. I will follow my own way, and I will reject God. But God came as the person of Jesus. He lived on this earth, and he died on the cross, and there was a legal action that took place in the court of heaven. And that legal action happened like this. As I stood before the judge guilty, Jesus paid the penalty for my crime. And here's what the Bible, justification means this, that when the eternal court of heaven looks at somebody who has trusted Christ, it no longer finds them guilty, it finds them pardoned. That God does not look at somebody who is guilty by their actions, but we are no longer guilty in the court because Jesus took that guilt upon himself. Does that make sense? Justification. And God makes us right with God. Jesus makes us right with God. We no longer are in a situation where we are guilty in the court. We're forgiven. And so here's let's tie these words together. This is not a guy who's just got, you know, he's kind of a good guy and everybody likes him because this is a man who has met Jesus and that Jesus has touched his life and forgiven his sins. And over a period of time, most of the time years, his life is being transformed on the outside to make him, he's become on the outside what God already did in his heart on the inside. And now you can see a guy who stands before you, not as a perfect person, not as a sinless person, but as a man who's been changed by Jesus and it's visible. When Paul says this guy needs to be above reproach, this is what he's talking about. It's kind of the umbrella over everything. And so this morning, we're going to kind of look at this, that the fact that as we talk about the men who are elders, the men who are leaders in his church, there's some areas he needs to be above reproach because he will reproduce himself in that church. And this is true. Any guy in here who's ever played sports gets this because if you've played sports, you've had a coach, and you've learned that the character of the coach is reproduced in the team. I played for coaches who were gym rats, who just like their whole life was a basketball or a baseball in their hand, and they knew the science of the game. They just understood everything about the nooks and crannies. And man, those coaches teach the intricacies of the game and teach people to really love the game. I had other coaches who were Bobby Knight type of guys who would throw chairs and cuss you out for no reason. And those teams were full of hothead guys who would get in a fight. I played for one coach who was like that. And in 42 college baseball games, we had 7 bench clearing brawls. And it went back to the coach. I mean, every time I turned around, somebody was getting beaned. He actually warned me in a game, if I didn't hit a guy in the ribs with a baseball, he was going to pull me out of the game. And so I had to drill the guy in the ribs with a baseball, start this huge bench-clearing brawl. And this was his character, okay? I had another coach who had no character. The crazy thing is the place I had a coach with no character was at Missouri Baptist College. It never did make sense to me. But that team was a bunch of hoodlums and hooligans who would steal from you, was foul mouth. It was the nastiest team I was ever on because the character of the coach is reproduced in a team. In the same way, the character of the leaders is going to be reproduced in the people who come to the church and who are part of it. And so Paul says, hey, dude, when you're calling these guys, because these churches need leaders, these new churches need people to lead them, make sure that you don't pursue charisma over character. Make sure that you pursue character over charisma. Because we live in a world, even in the church, it's really easy to take a guy who is flashy, who has great leadership skills, who can stand up, man, and he could just cut it loose, and you could listen to this guy for hours and put him on stage and make him the leader, and he may be a guy who's got such deep-seated character issues that all of a sudden they come out. Because I will promise you this, if you are serving in pastoral ministry, your character is going to show up. And all of a sudden, this guy who's been standing in front of you preaching and doing all this stuff is stealing or is dishonest or is having an affair. And all of a sudden, the church is devastated, but that kind of stuff will get reproduced because he'll start overlooking things that look like him. And as a fallen, broken, hurting person, I want to tell you that I'm not perfect. Neither are these guys. But I do believe that as we talk about this, I hope that my life is that where you look at me, you say, man, he knows Jesus, and it shows in his life, and he's being changed by his character. And there's three areas that I want to point this out that are in the text. And the first one is that this is a guy who's being changed in his character, a guy who is above reproach in his family. Look again at verse 6. He says, if anyone is above reproach, the husband of one wife, and his children are believers and not open to the charge of debauchery or insubordination. First of all, he says, listen, you need to look for guys who are are above reproach in their family. First of all, he says they need to be the husband of one wife. On the sermon notes page, I've actually written quite a bit about this, so you kind of get all the context of this. There are about five different interpretations here about what it means to be the husband of one wife. The literal original language means that he is a one-woman man. It's a literal translation, if you were to take the Greek here, is that he's a one-woman man. At least five different interpretations, but I'm going to tell you the one that I think, because I think what this is speaking to is the character of the guy now. I don't think this is addressing whether or not the guy, when he was 14 or 15 years old, fell into sin, or if he was 18, got married, and all of a sudden, man, it was before he knew Christ, or, you know, he may have known Christ, and now it's 40 years later, and he got divorced when he was 22, but he's been with the same wife for so many years, and God is blessing his life, and that marriage is solid and a picture of Jesus. I don't think it speaks to that. I know it doesn't speak to the issue of an elder has to be married, because Paul, who is writing this, refers to himself as an elder several times, and he's not married. But what I think it is talking about, I think it's talking about the fact that a man in his marriage life is the image of a guy who is dedicated and committed to his wife, and he doesn't let his eyes wander. He still flirts with her. He still winks at her. He still makes his kids uncomfortable because he's hugging on her and kissing her on her when they're around, and they're like, oh, this girl, stop it, you know. And that's the guys we're looking for, that have these marriages where, man, you look at him, you could tell, man, this guy's got a fidelity in his life to his wife. This guy has a commitment in his life to the woman that he is with. And he loves them, and he cares for her deeply, and he invests in her, and there is a real reciprocal relationship that people see, and they're like, man, they're old, and they still flirt. That's so cool, all right? That's kind of what Paul's saying. That is a guy who is just, it's the type of guy that when you're hanging out with your daughters and they're 13 and 14 years old and they're going, oh, what type of person, what type of man, what type of boy should I be looking for? You can look at the elders of the church and you say, you see that guy? He's an elder of our church. You find a guy who's just like him. You find a guy who treats you just like he treats his wife. It's the type of guy that when you're struggling in your marriage, you're going, okay, they're not judgmental. I know that we're hurting. But they're the type of people I think I can talk to about this because I see them and there's something about the quality of their relationship. It works. It's the type of guy who avoids looking. He's not sitting around on the internet all the time looking at porn. He's not, you know, hanging out at places, watching movies, doing stuff where his eyes are prone to wander. He's a one-woman man. Paul says, you know, the first thing, he needs to be above reproach in his marriage. He needs to be a one-woman man. And then he says that his children, he needs to have kids who love Jesus. Look at this. He says, his children are believers and not open to the charge of debauchery or insubordination. Two kind of weird words. When's the last time you went up, somebody said, hey, I charge you with debauchery? But the word actually means somebody who is just kind of a rebel. I mean, he's just, man, he's anti-authority. She is a person who just, man, she's a rebel in every area of her life. And here's what he's saying. He's saying, man, look at the kids of the elders. Look at them. As you're calling men, are they the type of kids you want your kids hanging out with? Are they the type of kids who will lead your kids away? You know, there's an old phrase, PKs, preacher's kids are always the worst. I get a kick out of my son because he has actually taken on a nickname that he's called here at school, here at Eureka High School. His nickname is PK. Most PKs hate that. It moves me deeply that he wears that badge with honor. And the reason a lot of PKs hate that is because daddy laid the family on the altar of ministry and sacrificed him for the good of the church and what he was called to do with people. I made a decision a long time ago I was sitting listening to a radio station. The song Cats in the Cradle came on. You know the song? And I started weeping. I said, no way my kids will sing that about me. For me, I love leading the church. I love being a pastor here and an elder. But if it comes down to a successful church or kids who love Jesus, that's an easy choice. So what happens is, guys, that's their life. All of a sudden, other people look at them and say, man, we want to model ourselves. We see what's going on. One of the most tragic stories in the Bible, story of a guy named Eli. Eli was a priest in God's temple. In 1 Samuel chapter 2, he was a pastor. He was a leader who did sacrifices to God and led worship and preached and did all this stuff. And he had two sons that went into family business. But as the story starts telling us about the two sons of Eli, the first words that God tells us is that the sons of Eli did not know the Lord. They did not know God. They were preaching and teaching and serving in the tabernacle, but they didn't know God. And so what they would do is, when they would do these big sacrifices, they would take an animal and they would sacrifice an altar as a way to say, listen, we honor you with this sacrifice. But what would happen is that Eli's sons were actually stealing these sacrifices before they would burn. They would take the T-bone steaks and the good stuff for themselves. But not only that, these guys were freaks, man. They were like hanging out and they were preaching. And while they were preaching, they were winking at women in the audience and beating them in the back room after the service. And having sexual relationships with women at the front door of the freaking church. And these guys, they were terrible. And God starts warning Eli, your sons are a mess. Your sons are a mess. But what happens is, the story goes on, we find out why. And here's why. There were two things in Eli that come out in the story. The first one is this, that he had just abandoned his sons to serve God's people. And the second thing is that some of the character flaws that were in private in Eli's life showed up with a megaphone in the life of his sons. Because he, too, was secretly and silently for years keeping a little bit off of God's sacrifices for himself. And his kids watched their dad. They watched when they needed somebody to throw a baseball with him, he'd rather go be with the people at church. And they watched their dad, as he said, stood up in front of people and said, have integrity, but they were skimming off. He was skimming off the top of himself. And the story ends up with these two boys are just horrendous, and they ruin this guy's life. I don't want that. I want my kids to love Jesus more than anything. That is success for my cupboard. And that's what he's saying. He's saying, listen, fine guys. I've watched the kids of these families. Some of them, they went all the way through my youth group. And I can tell you, they're the type of kids that you want your kids playing with. Or, well, some of them are not anymore. They're like in their 20s. But man, you can still play with them. They're that type of kids. This is what he says. Listen, kids who love Jesus. Next thing he says is this, that they should be above reproach in their family. They should be above reproach in their character. And what he does, he gives five negative characteristics and four positive ones. I'm going to run through this real quick. You'll see what these means, but he's saying this is the type of people that you need to have leading. Verse 7, an overseer as God's steward must be above reproach. He must not be arrogant. That means he's not about just pleasing myself. This is a guy who will promote his agenda and his ideas, but won't listen to anybody else. And that's bad, because somebody who gets in leadership can use that leadership to promote their own ideas in themselves. He says, not arrogant. Not quick-tempered. This is a guy who's got a short fuse, who is just always blowing up. He's just always angry, okay? Listen, that's going to be exposed when somebody's doing ministry with people, because there are some people who will push your buttons. It's just going to happen. And if you're somebody who's always, if you're quick-tempered, man, it's going to show up. Not a drunkard. The original Greek here, the original word means, literally is a compound word that means close to wine. This is somebody who's always got a bottle in their hand, who's always got a wine glass, who's always got a stash somewhere, who goes over the line a lot. It doesn't speak to whether or not a person can consume alcohol, but it does teach us, and the Bible's clear about this, drunkenness, being drunk is not God's best. It is a sin. And that being a person who depends on alcohol when you should be trusting God, that's a problem. This is a guy who may or may not use, but if they use, they use in such a way that it's not affecting who they are. You know, he's not out in public and just lost himself. All right, not a drunkard. It also says not violent. This is a guy who's a fighter. You know, he's always looking for a fight. He's always looking for a chance to just either rough somebody up physically or if not physically, do it with their mouth. To just cut somebody down, just mess with them verbally. Always looking for a fight. Or greedy for gain. This is a guy who sees leadership as a way to get a couple extra bucks. I heard this morning about a pastor here in the St. Louis area who'd been collecting money for foreign missions and had convinced his church to give all this money to go overseas and help. And he'd been pocketing this money for a long time. That's going to mess that church up. It's going to leave people broken and non-trusting. A guy like that, you know, I'll be honest, I don't touch money that comes in here. I don't have any access where I could, you know, because all these characteristics here can show up so easily. He goes on to say, but they need to be hospitable. Darren spoke to that. It's not just that, you know, I'll have all you guys over and serve pot roast. Hospitable means that you are welcoming to strangers. A lover of good, literally somebody who loves good people, that when somebody honors God, they value that. A self-controlled is somebody who's kind of wrestled with the things that they struggle with in life and they're gaining control over them. Upright means that they are just. They live in such a way that God's standard matters to them. Holy means to be unblemished, unstained, that the character of their life is not that it's just full of stains and ugly stuff, but it's unblemished. And then disciplined is an image of power being used. And it literally is kind of this image of somebody who had things that used to have power over them, but the gospel and grace in their lives, they're having power over things that used to control them. There's habits that they used to have that God has just graciously worked in their lives to help them overcome. Now here's the deal. Every word on this list is spoken somewhere else in the New Testament, speaking to every person who's a follower of Christ. This is not a list that is just about leaders. It is a list that every word, I could take you to passage after passage after passage and show you where the Bible says to anybody who's following Jesus, this ought to be you. Look at that list real quick. You might be here this morning. You might like the first three. All right, let's see. Must be above reproach. He must not be arrogant, quick-tempered, or drunk. Oh, my Lord. I am a hot-tempered, proud, drinking fool. How do you change? You may say, you know, I don't even like strangers. How can I be hospitable? People who are different from me and I don't know freak me out. I don't even want to lift my eyes and look at them. And here's the answer. This is what Paul's getting with Titus. When these type of men are leading God's church and you're struggling and you're trying to wrestle with what grace is in your life and to know God and to experience him, and man, you know, hey, I'm not there. There are people that God has placed in the church that become models that help you move that direction. They can't be legalists. I mean, you can't look at this and say, all right, I'm not a drunkard, and by gosh, all you drinking fools, how dare you? You need to be like me. That's not what he's saying. He's saying, listen, I need in the character of my life to be somebody that you guys look at in that issue and go, he deals with that. That's cool. I'm not there. I struggle. But I know that God wants me to wrestle with that. Does that make sense? And that's why God calls these guys this. And so they need to be above reproach in their character. And last, they need to be above reproach in their influence. He says in chapter 1 here, verse 9, he must hold firm to the trustworthy word as taught so that they may be able to give instruction in sound doctrine and rebuke those who contradict it. He says, listen, here's what the guy needs to be. He needs to be this type of character so that he can teach people how to follow God. How? He says they need to hold firm to the trustworthy word. He says, listen, they need to be people who grab hold of the scriptures, God's word, and the basic truths that are taught in it, and they've got a firm grip. Now, next week, we're going to talk even more about this. But he's saying, man, these men, and here's what's going to go on. And part of this training, I kind of freaked them all out because I gave them a ton of reading yesterday. And it's all theology. I mean, we're not reading like, you know, some touchy-feely novel that makes you feel good. It's all like this deep stuff, and they're like, oh my gosh, are you serious? But here's why. I want to make sure these men, if they're going to be elders, they have got a grip on what God has taught. So that, look at what he says, so that they may be able to give instruction in sound doctrine, so that they can take what they're holding on to and pass it on. Give instruction, great word. It's the same word that's used often for the Holy Spirit in the New Testament. It's one who comes alongside of somebody and just kind of holds their hand through the process, gets them through it. And he's saying, it's not somebody, I mean, one way we do this is I stand up here and yell at you for 45 minutes, hopefully, or more, every so often. And I tell you, but that's not the only way to give instruction. There's other ways that these men will speak into the lives of people in their church and rebuke those who contradict it. There are times where elders actually have to look at people who say, I don't believe that, but I'm going to be here in this church and I'm going to promote this idea. And they have to be the ones that stand up and say, not here, you don't. What you're teaching is going to hurt God's church. John Calvin said it this way. John Calvin, the reformer, said that a pastor, an elder, has to have two voices, one that calls the sheep and one that scares the wolves. And that's the teaching ministry of the church, is to stand up and say, this is what we believe, come with us, hang with us. It's kind of like Spider-Man. Remember Spider-Man in the first movie where near the end he's got Mary Jane and she's falling and he gets a good firm grip on this rope and he doesn't let, or the whatever, web, then whatever you want to call it. He's got a grip on it and he reaches down and he grabs her and he's got a grip on her. And his goal is to get her to safety, but here comes the Green Goblin. And while he's holding firmly to this rope, he is pulling her to safety. And at the same time, he is pushing the Green Goblin away. There's the teaching ministry of the church. Hold on to the word. Grab people and pull them to where they need to be. And when people come in and they want to destroy it, fight against it if you have to. And that's the teaching ministry. And so they're above reproach in their family. They're above reproach in their character. They're above reproach in their integrity. And this is what happens. People in the church start looking at them, following them, not because they're charismatic leaders. They may be, but that's not the key. They start seeing their character and they start saying, listen, whatever it is that God's done in their life, that's what I want too. And all of a sudden, they start reproducing their character in the church. And that's how God builds gospel churches. Great charismatic leaders can build big crowds. But sometimes their character is going to be reproduced in that church somewhere. And if they're not men who fit this description, when it comes out, it's usually not pretty. And we've all read stories about that, okay? But here's the bottom line. So what about you? Well, in Hebrews chapter 13, there's two verses, verse 7 and 17, that speak directly to people who are in the church and how they relate to leaders. Look at these verses. Remember your leaders, those who spoke the word of God to you. Consider the outcome of their way of life and imitate their faith. Look at the first thing. It says, consider the outcome of their way of life, meaning look at how they live, think about what they are doing, and consider if your life was headed that direction, what would be the outcome? If I lived the way that these guys live their lives, how would my life be better in a year, 2 years, 6 years? Imitate their faith, and then obey your leaders and submit to them. If they're godly men, follow their leadership, for they're keeping watch over your souls as those who will give an account. Let them do this with joy and not with groaning. Make their ministry, make their service something that they enjoy. I've been in churches where serving the church was deeply painful. Nobody wanted the pastors to have fun. It was heart-wrenching. That's not right. People who are serving the church do it because they love God and they love you, and let it be a joy. Not with groaning, for that would be of no advantage to you. And so here's the deal. We got now, I've been the sole elder of the church. We've got three guys walking through this process. Over 6 months, we're going to be testing them. But our ultimate goal is to say they're leading the church. And we hope that their character and their life is reproduced in this church as we grow as a people of people who are following Jesus, leading others to do the same. And that's what's happening at Genesis. We hope it changes your life. Because ultimately, it is about Jesus and the gospel and knowing that God forgives sin and changes lives. And that's what we hope for every person in here, that you will meet Jesus, come to know him, and realize he did a great thing for you, and he offers you a changed life. that makes all the difference in the world. So we're going to pray. If you don't know Jesus this morning, just pray and say, God, I need you in my life. And I just want to trust that Jesus died for me, and I give him my life. If you're not sure what that means, I'd love to talk to you afterwards. We're going to sing, and the songs we sing are about Jesus. They are worshiping him because he's the center of who we are. It is not exalting men who are elders. It's exalting Jesus, but we're showing you men whose lives have been changed by him. So we're going to exalt Jesus. We're going to worship him because he's the center of all that we are and all that we talk about and all that we do. We're going to take up an offering because during the offering, that's our way of saying he's given so much to me and we're just going to give back some. But if you're a guest, the offering is not for you. This service is our gift to you. We don't ask or want you to give. But those of you who are part of Genesis, this is your time of worshiping through your gifts. And then we're just going to celebrate who he is and all that kind of stuff. God, we praise you and we thank you for speaking to us this morning. Thank you for the men who are going to lead. And I just pray, Lord, that you would help us as the church really honor you. Lord, I pray that you will show yourself to be real and wonderful and beautiful this morning, and that as we sing and as we worship, we will just come to trust you and love you more. In your name I pray. Amen.